friends with Lot and his daughters, which was even kind of maybe even worse. I mean, just really bad stuff. The younger the daughters have basically there's incest going on, and the daughters have sons, and those sons end up being fathers of nations that are that end up being pitted against Israel, and so just bad stuff happening in chapter 19. So chapter 20, the scene shifts from Lot back to Abraham, and Abraham's going to repeat a sin. He's going to repeat something that he did. In fact, this story is going to sound exactly like a previous story that we already read. And so one of the things right out of the gate from chapter 20 that we're going to see is that once committed, sin can often lead to a stronger temptation. So when you enter into sin the first time, into a specific sin the first time, it often leads to a stronger temptation to either continue into that sin or to dive deeper into that sin or to repeat that sin. And so a lot of this is about staying away from it from the beginning. And don't dip your toes in. I think sometimes we think we can dip our toes into something and we won't get burned. You know, the best strategy is not to dip your toes in, right? I'll tell you a really quick story because I was at Jacksonville for a conference this week. No, it's actually not a confession. So, and I'm proud to say that I don't have anything to confess. So, they sent us a little flyer to tell us about, like, little things about ourselves. And one of the things that they asked for was a book that you would recommend. And I know that they were probably asking me for a management book, right? You know, five dysfunctions of a team or something like that. But when I was, who moved my cheese, right? So, but when I was sitting there trying to think of an answer, I couldn't think of any other answer other than the Bible.
Say, John.
So I put the Bible down, and then I sent it away, and I thought, they're going to think I'm a nut, because they are.
Right.
Just because they're all going to have these management things, and this one guy put the Bible down, right? Yeah. And so I didn't know how they were going to use it, but they, at the conference, at the conference, they gave me, the management styles of Jesus, right? Is that what I put that in there for? Anyway, so they had a booklet, and the booklet had pages of people's answers in it. And it turns out I was one of three people who put the Bible down.
Good.
So that was a good thing. In a crowd of about, you know, maybe 100 people.
3%
or more.
We can do that. thanks for the
100. Yeah, that's right. A nice round number.
Yeah. In 75, we would still be figuring it out.
There was also, everybody at this table has to make their own decision about alcohol, but because I'm a deacon at First Baptist, I've made a written commitment not to drink. And so I don't think it's a sin necessarily, but we don't need to talk about that, right? But it was free flowing at the conference. Our dinner table in the evening had an ice bucket full of beer.
Yeah.
The same thing at Topgolf, and I really enjoyed Topgolf. It was theoretically good beer, right? And what some of you guys may or may not know is that I really enjoyed drinking beer before I signed my little commitment to not. Mm. And so it was a real temptation.
Yeah.
I'm in a different city. Most 99% of the people don't know who I am. 100% of the people don't know my commitment. And 100% of the people were drinking, except for me. And so my point is not to say, hey, look at me, look what I did. My point is, I know that if I dip my toe in, I can't just dip my toe in without getting completely contaminated.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I'm not saying that particular sin, but for me, that would have been...
You're all in.
Because I made a commitment not to, and I believe in the commitment and what have you. You follow me?
Yeah.
And so for me, it would have been a bad thing to do. And eventually, I'm sure it would have caught up to me. And I have been away from it for so long that had I just... Because these guys were drinking like fish, and it didn't seem to affect them at all. It, had I done it just even a little bit, I would have been looped after the first beer, right? And I'm sure that my guard would have been down and things would have happened and I'd be on the news or something.
Didn't Greg just do a sermon?
Nobody did. It was really weird.
Even Lot. I mean,
Lot.
Didn't Greg just talk about something like this? About
I don't know. We're a couple
weeks behind.
He gave
an illustration
behind, so.
About kids standing on the edge of a cliff or something, or maybe I heard it somewhere else.
No, it was last week, yeah.
Yeah, well, we'll hear it this week.
Yeah, you walk up to the edge.
I appreciate you. You just kind of
wait. Spoiler alert for us. Yeah,
it's just an illustration.
Don't
just part of the illustration.
Yeah, right.
Part of the illustration.
Yeah. So going back to Abraham,
I see our pastor giving an example.
Okay. Oh, you're prophesying that he's going to give an example this week. So going back to Abraham in 12:12, Abraham's lie. He lies in chapter 12, verse 12. And he's going to repeat this pattern in chapter 20. One commentator said that once tasted, the pleasure of sin for a season is often almost irresistible. Once we taste the pleasure of sin for a season, that temptation is often, what does it say? Often, almost. It's often almost irresistible. So that's an interesting quote. Any other thoughts? And we'll dive into the text.
It's easy to forget. I'm sure he had done it before, but here he is presented with the same situation or a similar situation. What happened back in chapter 12 was a long time ago.
It's easy to justify yourself.
Oh, that's a good point. I like that point. This is years later.
Yeah.
And it's easy to forget.
It's easy to forget.
That's a quote, and I'm going to have to look up where I got this quote from. It might have been John Piper, but when asked, why do we always come back to the gospel in your sermons? You're always preaching the gospel. And the answer was, because we're forgetful people.
Yeah.
And that's not only do we forget the gospel, but we also forget our past indiscretions sometimes, and we're prone to repeat them.
Lessons learned in our past.
Yeah.
You forget everything.
Yeah. That's good. Let me pick up the text in chapter 20, verse 1. Says, from there, Abraham journeyed towards the territory of the Negev and lived between Kadesh and Shur, and he sojourned in Gerar. And Abraham said to Sarah, his wife, she is my sister. And Abimelech, king of Gerar, sent and took Sarah. But God came to Abimelech in a dream by night and said to him, behold, you are a dead man because of the woman whom you have taken, for she is a man's wife. Now Abimelech had not approached her, so he said, Lord, you will kill an innocent people? Did he not himself say to me, she is my sister? And she herself said, he is my brother? In the integrity of my heart, in the innocence of my hands, I have done this. Then God said to him in the dream, yes, I know that you've done this in the integrity of your heart, and it was I who kept you from sinning against me. Therefore, I did not let you touch her. Now then, return the man's wife. For he's a prophet, so that he will pray for you and you shall live. But if you do not return her, know that you shall surely die and all who are yours. And so here's the repeated sin. Abraham travels from Mamre to Gerar, which is a Philistine settlement, just geographically west of the Dead Sea, between these other two towns, Kadesh and Shur. And don't know why, but one speculation on why he moved was potentially to get away from the devastated area where Sodom and Gomorrah is, right? So this is right after that, and maybe he's moving because that area is no longer a good area to be in, right? And so potentially he's leaving for that.
It's a long shelf life.
This is potentially, like from a timeline standpoint.
Probably will.
Yeah, he's nearly 100 years old. So then, less than 3 months after God had promised that Sarah would bear Abraham a son, in chapter 18, verse 10, God reiterates and promises in person that she's going to bear him a son. This is less than 3 months later. He's going into this new town and essentially giving his wife to Abimelech. Now, what did he think Abimelech was going to do with his wife? If he took his wife. Essentially, the same thing that happened in chapter 12 is the king gets to pick his harem. In chapter 12, Abraham's a little bit nervous that this is going to happen because Sarah's apparently beautiful. And apparently, even in, as a senior citizen,
she's
a beautiful woman. And he's afraid that because of her beauty, his life is going to be at risk. They're going to take his life so that they can have her.
You know, the note in my Bible in Alan's too,
had to take me with
him. Points out a couple things about that. One, that he made the same error that he made back in Egypt.
Uh-huh.
And but that he, when he left, he was kicked out of Egypt, had to leave, but he left a wealthy man.
Yes, he did. Because the Pharaoh had given him all this wealth.
That's right.
And when he left Egypt, he became very wealthy.
And so, you know, perhaps there's certain aspects about what happened before that he didn't forget.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that he had money?
Yeah. That
hey, it worked once?
Yeah. This
bank account's a little low.
Who knows?
That's interesting. I don't think he did this for money, though, right?
Well, probably not. So
probably, I think he was doing this again for self.
But what happened to him back then, maybe he wasn't thinking about the same as we're thinking about here, like, boy, he just dodged a bullet. I don't know.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, survival before, now it's just like plotting and scheming.
I think he's doing this literally, and this story doesn't give you the same detail that chapter 12 does when he goes to Egypt. But it so parallels that the reasons are probably very similar. I'm going to get in trouble. Abimelech does the same thing Pharaoh does. He takes her into his harem. It's the ESV study note, I think, is kind of funny here for chapter 20, verse 2. And Abraham said, Sarah is his wife. She's my sister. And Abimelech then took her. The ESV study note says, evidently, Sarah looked much younger than her real age.
Well, she hadn't been chasing kids.
Yeah, maybe so.
In that dry desert stuff, you know.
Abimelech is a common name for king. It also says that. It means my father is king. That's what the name Abimelech means. My father is king. And so he does. It's a common royal name. But he does what kings do back then. He takes her into his harem.
So
Alan, you're about to mention something. Or Alan? And then Alan and then Van?
Go ahead.
Van and then Alan.
I was going to say, are we letting ourselves off easy here? I mean, do we really forget our past sins? Or do we, like, well, that wasn't so bad?
You conveniently justify yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe we forget the impact of our past sins.
I think that's, maybe
what it was.
Exactly.
What it was like.
Right.
Yeah.
Because as soon as you sin again after you've sinned once, you know that, like, I probably shouldn't do that again, but consequences weren't as bad as I expected.
God's a forgiving God.
Yeah. I think we take advantage. I think we.
Oh, that's a good point in what you just said.
Don't you hold a ticket in your back pocket, man? I mean, so
we all have our ticket.
Right, right, exactly.
God forgives; He's a redeemer.
Doesn't matter how we get there.
That's what I'm saying.
What were you going to? You said
there's all those versions.
God is a forgiving God.
He's a forgiving God, and I think we presume upon that. Mm-hmm. And Paul talks about that in Romans.
Yeah.
Don't presume upon His grace.
Yeah.
The only thing I was looking at in the notes. Was that it says here, back in chapter 12, verse 18 through 20, that when you said he left a much wealthier man, but it also says here, it says, thus it, where is it? Basically, that it appeared as a deception that God may have blessed him.
Yeah.
In the deception of,
back in chapter 12.
Back in chapter 12. Yeah. It's kind of like.
Right. That seemed to work out.
It seemed to work out really well. But then you're going.
I kind of thought that was wrong for me to do. But it worked out
here
well.
Going, okay, is
that's the difference between grace and mercy, right?
Yeah, it is. But at the same time, I would almost kind of sit there and start going, "What's he about to let happen to me?"
Grace is getting what you don't deserve, and so
let this go because
grace is getting what you don't deserve. So he goes. He deserved God to chastise him and punish him.
Mm-hmm.
But instead of being chastised and punished in chapter 12, he got blessed with this tremendous wealth. It's counterintuitive, right?
Yeah.
You wouldn't think that's how God's going to respond to some things. And he doesn't always respond that way. But he responded that way with Abraham. He gave him grace. And if you think about it, we're the most wealthy of all people because we're covered by the grace of God in Jesus Christ. You think about the wealth from that. No price can pay for that.
Abraham's wealth was not a result of his action.
No, it was a grace of God that was given to him.
So,
grace of God.
And what my notes say is he didn't learn his lesson the first time. It didn't say forgot.
Oh, I don't think
so. He didn't learn his
lesson. He didn't learn his lesson.
There's a big difference between forgetting.
And so maybe he didn't learn his lesson because he ended up wealthy.
Right.
And he had no negative consequences.
Right.
Well, you know,
God bailed him out.
Think about the times you got away.
God's
going to
bail him out here.
I mean, like you knew this could have been much worse.
Exactly, exactly.
And then the next time comes around, you're like, that's
well, what's the worst that could happen?
What's the worst that could happen?
I can deal with that. You know,
Matt, we'll try and get started much earlier next year.
Glad you got the 7:30 meeting
next week. Next week,
you know, I'm. No, next week. Next week is
Thanksgiving.
We're rejected in town.
Safe travels.
But I'll normally be here.
Okay, good.
All right. Otherwise, we're going to stalk you.
Stalk me.
We will stalk you.
You like the commitment.
We're not going to stalk you. We're going to stalk
see
you.
Stalk you.
Not stalk.
Hang in there, man.
Stalk you. Stalk you. That's like beating with a stalk.
You know, not only did we ask why did Abraham do this, but, you know, it's also...
God.
Well, no. No. Oh. He asked him, you know.
Oh, Abimelech's going to ask him.
Yeah. So, you know, if we read verse 11,
let's go
we're
going
to get the answer.
I think we'll maybe get there. Look at verse 3, though, before we get to verse 11.
That's how it works.
But God. You know, I think our church likes but God. I think I've heard several sermons from Houston's First Baptist Church that started off with but God. You know, Abraham goes into something, he's going to do something, but God has a different plan, but God has a different purpose. And here God intervenes. And so God's mercy is revealed in his protection, his forgiveness, and his faithfulness. It says, but God came to Abimelech in a dream. The Holman Christian Study Note says that God in his mercy intervened to keep his promise regarding Sarah. So why did God intervene? Because God's going to keep his promises.
God has a promise.
Even if you mess things up, God's going to keep his promise. Mm-hmm. Mm. So God keeps his promise regarding Sarah, and he keeps that from being destroyed by Abraham's foolish act. That's the Holman Christian Study Note. In addition to warning Abimelech that Sarah was married, the Lord had also created a health crisis in his household, causing all the other women to become temporarily sterile. We'll see that later on as we go forward. Because Abimelech had acted with a clear conscience and clean hands, despite Sarah coming into his harem, God would not destroy Abimelech's governmental leadership and thus undermine the nation. But God comes to Abimelech in a dream by night and says to him, and you know, you don't want to be the guy who dreams that God comes to you and says, you are a dead man. You don't want to be that guy, right? Can you imagine? I don't know if everyone's translating.
He came to you.
I don't know if everybody else's translation is as blunt as the ESV. Does everyone say, you are a dead man?
Mine says
you are about to die.
You're a dead man.
Mine says, you're as good as dead.
You're as good as dead. What's your translation?
Like
is that the NIV?
Western.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
the NIV?
You're as good as dead because of the woman you have taken.
Man. Yeah, so God intervenes.
Think about that in context here. Sodom and Gomorrah just happened.
Yeah, people know
that. They know what death is. They know what God's death is.
In the book of Genesis, God uses dreams a lot for divine revelation and comes to people in their dream. We've read several dreams where God is coming and appearing to people in their dreams. You don't want to be the one, just like we said, that dreams that God comes and said, you're a dead man or you're as good as dead.
Let's think about that. You know, we are really an ignorant group.
Yeah.
We are all as good as dead. So we need to live our lives knowing that.
Yeah.
So that we, you know,
so that we can truly live.
Exactly. I mean, so this is, you know,
soundbite.
But you kind of hear it. You know, you're as good as dead. You know, I was kind of thinking, he's dead, all of it.
True. You know? True. So what does Abimelech do? Look at the next verse there. He pleads his case. Lord, are you going to kill an innocent person? Did he not himself say to me, she's my sister? Verse 6, then God said to him in the dream, yes, I know that apparently they're having a conversation in his dreams. That's really weird. Then God said to him in his dreams, yes, I know that you've done this in the integrity of your heart, and it was I who kept you from sinning. So God actually stepped in and kept Abimelech from being able to consummate this marriage, because that's essentially what was happening here with Sarah. And thus, potentially, If he has a child with Sarah, all of a sudden, that's a huge problem with the promise, right? And I'm wondering how that would work, because Sarah was barren, but there was a threat that Abimelech could father a child with her. So did God already open her womb?
So you're going down the what would have happened road.
I am.
When God already has a plan. It doesn't matter.
What would have happened without God's plan in place?
It doesn't matter.
Yeah. So, but if you do not return or know that you'll surely die, that's in verse 7. Let's pick up verse 8. Oh, do you have a question? A thought?
No, my thought was you can either choose to be a part of God's plan, or God can easily just move you aside and just keep going with his plan.
Yeah, and sometimes moving you aside is a really
it's the you are about to die part.
Yeah.
He moved Abimelech aside.
Yeah, he would have moved Abimelech.
That's what he's doing here, right?
Exactly.
He's like, oh, wait, no, I'm sorry. What you're not aware of is I have a plan. You're not involved.
So either get out of the way or die.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what's happening here.
I am God and you are not.
Move aside or get run over. That's kind of the thing.
Unbeknownst to you.
Verse 8. So Abimelech rose early in the morning, which one would want to do if you have a dream like this, I would think. Rose early in the morning and called all his servants and told them all of these things. And the men were very much afraid. And like you said, someone said, Sodom and Gomorrah, recent memory. Maybe people realize what's going on here. Then Abimelech called Abraham and said to him, what have you done to us, and how have I sinned against you that you have brought on me and my kingdom a great sin? Like, why did you even come here?
Yeah.
You've done to me things that ought not to be done. And Abimelech said to Abraham, what did you see that you did this thing? Verse 11, Abraham said, I did it because I thought, there is no fear of God at all in this place, and they will kill me because of my wife. See, so there's the reason behind that. Besides, she is indeed my sister, the daughter of my father, though not the daughter of my mother, and she became my wife. So she's kind of like a steps. She's a basic.
She really is my sister. She's the daughter of my father.
Yeah.
She's a half-sister.
Correct.
Oh, that wasn't Baptist brother-sister stuff?
No.
So, verse 12, besides, she really is my sister, the daughter of my father.
So I didn't really lie?
Though not the daughter of my mother.
Right.
Aren't half-truths?
And she became my wife.
Half-lies, half-lies,
half-sisters.
Yeah.
Oh, a half-lie still a lie? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, verse 13... Yeah. And when God caused me to wander from my father's house, I said to her, this is the kindness you must do me at every place to which we come. Say of me, he is my brother. So God expected faithfulness on behalf of Abraham. The good thing is he doesn't necessarily expect perfection. He knows that we're going to sin. And in verse 9 says that.
There it is. There's the out.
My study note for verse 9 says that as opposed to many mythical heroes of other religious books, the real life characters in the Bible are shown as completely human, full of capacity to fail. Mm-hmm. Throughout Scripture, Abraham is recalled as a hero, yet he failed more than once. That is always like really comforting to me.
Yeah,
right? The heroes in the Bible are all flawed, minus Jesus. All the rest of the heroes in the Bible have flaws.
Kind of leading up to that crescendo.
Which also is instructive, because we know that we're all flawed. And none of us can reach perfection. Yeah. Even the best people in the Bible are flawed. You know? And so that's...
You know, one common theme, however, of the heroes of the Bible, in my mind, is they... failed in the flesh, had good hearts. You know, you think of, you know, Lot. Peter says Lot was righteous.
Yeah.
Though he got drunk and went to bed with his daughters. You know, Abraham, mistake after mistake. David, the mistake after
and
mistake.
And so here's
love for the Lord, you know?
That he knows their hearts, right? And so the Bible talks about God knows the intentions of your hearts, right? And so... twofold in what you just said. We could be apparently righteous on the outside and have really dark hearts. Mm-hmm. God knows that. Mm-hmm. On the flip side, we could make mistake after mistake and be really terrible on the outside but have the right heart.
We're just bad at it.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? So it could be the opposite as well. And so when we get to, like, if Dennis was here, and if we're taping this, it's okay, Dennis, I'm talking about you if you ever listen to this. He would say that Christians tend to judge people, right? And I would say that this is a good example why we shouldn't judge people, because we don't know the intentions of people's hearts.
And I was about to say here, too,
we can judge actions.
It's so easy, and not just only because you brought this up, but it's so easy for us to have compassion looking back on these guys, and we know their story. Okay, here was their heart, but then they did this. Well, if we're able to sit here and give the compassion, the grace, and the mercy for these guys, why can't we do that?
So if we found out that Mark was going to lend his wife to another guy, we'd be like,
y'all, right? Forgive me. Y'all, we know your heart, Mark.
We'd be like, oh, we know your heart. Yeah.
Your heart was in the right place, brother.
Right,
exactly. But would you come next week and teach us again how to live?
I think what we're trying to say is that... What I was trying to say is we can definitely judge actions as right and wrong, mm-hmm. because the Bible talks all day long about actions. But what we can't do is judge the individual, I think, from a heart standpoint. We can say what you did was not a right thing, and it's obvious because the Bible tells us that it's not right to do XYZ. But it's really difficult for us, and when we judge a person at that level, so I'm going off on a tangent, but when we judge a person at that level, we tend to also write that person off. We should not be a people that write other people off. Because we have been those other people.
When we recognize something in someone else we don't like, we shouldn't be judging them in the first place.
Right. I agree.
We can call them out. We can...
Well, it's what he just said.
But yeah,
you can judge the actions.
But I'm saying, I'm jumping on semantics of the word, right? That's what we do. We judge. We
do
say something as opposed to correct or, you know. It's like your kids, right? You don't judge your kids when they do wrong. You don't, like, you're a bad person and I don't want you in this family.
I think there's
when your friend's kid comes along,
yeah, you're all over them, right?
But I think there's a fine line too, because I think that we have to have wisdom and discernment when it comes to dealing with people. If someone burns us, maybe there's a tendency for them to burn us again. Yep. So we need to be careful. We need to have wisdom and discernment. But we also have to have compassion and grace and mercy and exhibit all the characteristics that Jesus Christ exhibited, right? And that's really hard to navigate, you know. And a lot of times we have to navigate it, and I'm thinking to myself, we have to navigate that with family members, right? They're the closest ones to you, and oftentimes it's a family member who can cause you the most, create the most anger in you, or the opposite, right?
Yeah,
and so the danger is writing people off, but yet... I also think back to the New Testament. There are times when they wrote off entire towns, and Sodom and Gomorrah itself got completely judged. Right. So that comes down to discernment, and it comes down to asking and seeking wisdom when you're in that position, right? Do you write someone off because, you know what, you've been burned too many times, you know that the pattern is there, that they haven't changed, there's no repentance? But if they come back to you and ask for grace and mercy and forgiveness, then even though you've written them off, I think you have to be responsive to that. And that's really hard to do, and that's why we need the Holy Spirit to help us. Because...
What's the saying?
Pull me once, shame on you. Pull me twice, shame on me.
Right. Well, yeah.
What's the third
time? Pull me 77 times.
And I still have to forgive you.
So part of what we need to do is try to get to know people and try to assess, was it a one-time screw-up? Was it their heart? You know,
it's...
Yeah, I don't know if we get to assess
if we
that.
If we assessed if it's
okay,
that hard.
So let's talk about this.
Let's get to semantics.
Yeah, that's right. So let's get to practical application.
And that's that you have to exercise wisdom and decide how you're going to deal with that person going forward. Yeah. You do have to. So someone is causing you harm or grief, or that's what that person is all about.
You can separate yourself from that person, but you just can't write them off.
Okay, so why would you separate yourself?
If someone is hurting you, or if somebody is endangering you, or if somebody
is... How do you know? I mean, that's what I'm talking about. Is, you know,
I think
so,
you can feel some of those things.
But how do you feel it? I'm trying to get to the practical application.
I think the people that you,
is you, so you
distance yourself from are the people who are chronically... behaving in the same manner with no repentance.
Exactly.
At some point, you've got to say, this isn't going to change. This isn't a good situation.
That's what I just said.
Yeah.
You're out.
Yeah, and I think that is what you said.
Yeah, I mean, because it's.
You got to know if it's a pattern, if it's going to be. This is how they are.
Exactly.
This is them.
And if I've said heart, maybe it's their brain, whatever term you want to use, their hands, you know, if. There's a chance it's going to be repetitive behavior, part of what you have to do.
I agree, and it's all.
And
you got to ask for wisdom and discernment.
Judgment now.
My notes say, in fact, by giving in to the temptation again, Adam risked turning a sinful act into a sinful pattern.
Abraham.
That's a good note.
Right.
That's a good. Yeah. That's exactly what we're talking about. Right. A sinful act turns into a sinful pattern. Wow, I like that. I'm going to have to remember that. Absolutely. That's exactly
that's
what we're
talking about.
That's
what we started with.
Right? Yeah, that's dipping your toes in the water and doing that.
You know,
that's
a good summary.
Look,
the thing that hurts me the most from reading this, I'm putting myself in a good way, to have a heathen come and tell you.
Oh, call you out. That's a good point.
Yeah.
That's when you say, please.
You're a church guy, right? You're doing that?
Yeah. You know this is
don't you go to church?
Yeah, cover all the mirrors.
You're
I don't want to look at myself.
Do you see all the bad things that could have happened to me at the conference? Do you know what I'm talking about? Because there would have been two or three people that said, I think I know about you. You're not supposed to be doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're the Bible guy, right?
Yeah. Well,
I didn't even think about that. I dodged a bullet. You know?
Well, in Houston I am, but not in Jacksonville.
Right. What happens in Jacksonville stays in Jacksonville.
Well,
look at verse 14.
That's probably true.
Then here comes the grace again. Then Abimelech took sheep and oxen. And male servants and female servants, and gave them to Abraham, and returned Sarah to his wife to him.
Now we have some cultural issues. But.
And Abimelech said, behold, my land is before you. Dwell where it pleases you. To Sarah he said, behold, I've given your brother 1,000 pieces of silver. It is a sign of your innocence in the eyes of all who are with you, and before everyone you are vindicated.
So once again, it was nice doing business. I was just going to say, we're repeating chapter 12.
This is a very profitable sin.
Right. We're repeating chapter 12 again.
It is so right.
I mean,
what do we learn here?
He lies again. It's his sixth sin,
exactly,
and now he's becoming
doing business with you.
My study note suggests that
Abraham was so blessed because he came clean.
Abraham did?
Yeah, well, when confronted by the heathen,
he
didn't have a choice to come clean.
He came to a meeting. What's his meeting about?
Well, he confessed.
Hey, I'm giving you all
this. No, Abimelech said, what did you do to me?
And
he's like, I did all this stuff.
Yeah, well, she really kind of is my sister.
So I don't necessarily buy that study.
Here's the invoice.
Oh, verse 19. Here it is. And Abraham gave it all back.
No. Yeah, it's not in there.
I was looking for 19.
So Abraham said, no thanks. I made a mistake here. My bad.
Wait,
verse 17.
Does Abimelech get a tax write-off giving all these?
Then Abraham prayed to God, and God healed Abimelech and also healed his wife and female slaves so that they bore children. God had closed all of their wombs. He's like,
was that referenced before?
No.
Well, you had to know that.
How much time had passed?
Yeah.
Verse 18 says it, for the Lord had closed all the wombs of the house of Abimelech because of Sarah.
But did he say that he closed them early?
No.
Okay,
it doesn't, you don't see it until verse
18. It looks like it was like a short time span there.
Like one, like 24 hours.
I don't think it was very long.
How do you sit here and determine the length?
That y'all can get pregnant. That's usually 9 months for you, so you can't get pregnant.
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't.
Or at least a month that women stop having periods.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
Well, so he closed them, and then he opened them up again the next day.
And then you were preparing the way, because chapter 21, I missed that. What's that?
I didn't say Abimelech breathed a sigh of relief, because...
Maybe he's... Yeah.
So here's something I'm getting out of this, that I've been occupied with lately. So Abraham does this. Yeah. He sins again.
Yeah. He's blessed again.
He's blessed again.
Yeah, I mean, this is...
And that could make me upset.
Yeah.
Right?
Because you're like, when I sin, exactly, it's just all bad.
Because when you sin, you pay for it.
Exactly. Well, I think I do, right? Yeah. But then sometimes I don't. I mean, my point is...
But you know what I'm saying.
I know where you're going.
You feel it. Exactly. There's consequences. There's not good consequences.
Well, where I'm going is, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what happens here, because God already has a decision about how he's going to deal with Abraham, and I could do the same exact thing that Abraham did, and God may deal completely different with me, because I don't know what the plan is, right? But I mean, I'm reading this, I'm like, well, like I said, this is turning into a profitable situation here. Maybe he ought to keep trying this, and at the same time, it's like, but that's not God's plan. That's not God's plan, right?
Exactly.
Or maybe it is God's plan. It doesn't matter. It doesn't.
All we know
it doesn't
is it's
matter.
God's plan, and it's not ours.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, that's the thing. It's God's plan. It doesn't matter.
That covers everything.
Doesn't matter.
That is.
It's God's plan. Mm-hmm.
If you go out and do something wrong, or you go out and do something right, and you benefit, or you suffer a consequence, it really doesn't matter, because.
I've seen people do the right thing and not benefit.
In that sense, exactly.
And another thing.
Because God's already got a plan.
And actually suffer sometimes.
You see people do the wrong thing
and benefit.
Well, short term, we see some benefit. The deal is it's a long game.
Yeah.
It's a long game.
Okay, but sometimes they benefit forever.
You're right. It's a long game.
Sometimes they benefit forever. That's just the way it works.
I need to follow up with a coworker.
Keep going.
But that's what my point is, we don't see it.
We don't see the end.
It's like reading in the Bible, because some of this could be a setup for the ultimate test.
Yeah.
Really sacrificing his own son, and does he have the will or not
right.
to do that? So I don't know. I mean, God has a different...
Well, everything in Abraham's life is formative and leading up to different things that are happening.
My point is, we can't...
We don't know the future.
We
right?
can't worry about it. We can't worry about it.
I had a meeting or a conversation with a coworker years and years ago, and we were talking about Christianity, and she asked a question. I get this, but I don't understand, because it doesn't really work in true life.
Ooh.
My cousin, she says, my cousin lives in Florida. They own a mansion. They're filthy rich, and I know that they do and sell drugs.
Yeah.
And she's
profitable.
Like, but they have everything in life. I'm doing the right stuff, and I'm struggling to make ends meet. How does that work out? And where's God in all that? That was the question posed to me. And the answer that you guys are saying is, you said it's a long game, not a short game. What I need to do is follow up with her. Hey, so how's your cousin doing in Florida?
Yeah.
What if she says
she's not still living in the mansion?
She's doing
what?
Well, I mean,
that's my point. It doesn't matter.
Thanks, brother.
Thanks
for asking about.
Yeah,
she upgraded. So here's the one. Is she a Christian?
She's a question.
I didn't hear where
that's
she's a question.
You often had.
She started coming to
but
church.
But I'm sitting here as a Christian going, yes, I get that. I understand that. Felt that.
Been there.
But then in my long game,
the reward isn't here on in life.
Yeah, good, good. That was essentially
so. Essentially,
my answer.
That's what you want to
answer.
And
that was basically my answer.
And I think the short game answer,
which doesn't make you,
I bet you
that doesn't
feel
make
better.
It feel better. Huh? Though.
I bet you sleep good.
Yeah. So for instance,
but I think that's the wrong.
Bring this to a more down to earth. My grandfather's cattle partner, okay, still lives next to the land. I will tell you from growing up, this guy, everything he touches
is gold.
Every business that he gets involved in, logging, hay, cattle, running cattle on the land, everything this guy touches. Raising bulls,
I know what.
Just
gold.
It's just gold. It's everything. But he doesn't have everything.
Mm. But you know, gold is not
because everything that he has. Well, hold on. I don't even know why you're shaking your head yet. Everything he has, he's not going to take with him. And
yeah,
we've talked. I have been out at 5 a.m. in the morning sweeping for army worms out in the grass.
We've all been
and,
there.
Yeah, exactly. And just talk to him about,
early bird,
you know,
gets the worm.
Have you gone to church at all? You know, I know my grandfather talked to you this about. He doesn't want to talk about
so
Jesus.
It's similar to what my coworker, yeah, so he's got everything,
yeah, and
seemingly everything.
I mean,
I think this is a
Abimelech had the wealth.
Dangerous area for Christians, because I think that's one of the ways we rationalize it, right? We go, well, the long term, or whatever. But my point is,
I'm not rationalizing something God tells me.
We shouldn't even go there. We should. Nowhere does it say, does God say, compare yourself
compare your wealth to others.
Compare yourself
to others.
I'm not
comparing
my
wealth.
Why is he benefiting
and I'm not?
Why,
but I'm not. But I'm not sitting here comparing my wealth. I'm just talking about a man who has everything, is able to provide everything.
Right.
Could if saw God and would realize why he's really here on earth of what God could do through him with what he has,
right.
But not realizing how much he really has. Like, he knows how much he has,
yeah.
He doesn't realize how much he has.
Yeah. I'm not talking about that specific case, but I mean, often we don't know what's happening in a person's heart and their
mm-hmm.
lives.
Yeah.
Are they really happy? Do they have a good relationship with their wife or their kids? Is
there right,
all kinds
exactly.
of other suffering that apparent, you know,
well. And I could tell you all that about this, too. And,
well,
that,
so
and that's the
that's
thing.
The,
yeah, there's a flip side.
I saw Scarface.
Mm-hmm. Pablo Escobar. It's on Narcos.
Yeah.
Hardly has a relationship with the son.
Okay.
And so is the flip side.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a couple lessons.
Bring us
together. Yeah. So let me wrap this up real quick.
Yeah.
There's a couple of things. There's a couple of things at the end here. Let's score a touchdown. So there are a couple of things here that happen at the end of this. Number one, Abraham prays for Abimelech. So there's still faith. There's still a commitment to Christ. Prays for Abimelech. In verse 17, then Abraham prayed to God, and God healed Abimelech. So there's an answered prayer. He prays, God answers, responds, and heals Abimelech. The other thing is Abimelech gave him the money and the wealth to symbolize, so we can't leave out the cultural significance. I didn't touch her. They're going away. I have no claim to any children that they have in the future, which is a good thing because Isaac's about to be born, and Abimelech is saying, I didn't do it.
Yeah.
Right? And part of saying I didn't do it is he gave his wealth to Abraham.
Yeah.
He would not have done that.
Right,
you can almost...
Because it's actually the opposite culturally.
Correct.
The status of his having born children from this person, from this wealthy group of nomads, I mean, it would...
Yeah,
so I should have.
It's almost like he's given them a gift for maybe even a future child, a future. Here's your gift. I'm giving you money. I'm not taking from you. Your child, your future child, is born to you, and there's significance in that giving of that gift to Abraham. Of course, Abraham does accept it.
So
then he prays, and Abimelech's family is
here. So, is there any sin here in Abimelech? Chapter 20?
Any sin in Abimelech?
I say no.
That's where I am. I think this guy is a guy that you...
He just got blindsided.
We just took somebody's family member.
How he...
Well, yeah, I mean, I was going to say...
Abimelech's a pagan.
Well, yeah. So,
now...
I like the way you...
Well, yeah, of course.
You know.
So...
Well...
You're asking Abimelech is a sinful person.
Right.
But does this text indicate...
Because we all are.
Oh, well, I was going to say... I mean,
okay, because we all are.
But look at some of the things he was doing.
You're right. That's probably the only answer. I'll just leave
just
it
there.
But he's pagan. Beyond being a sinful person, he's not a follower of Yahweh.
Okay. But I didn't see that anywhere. Like but
he's not.
Listen to Yahweh.
He did. That they were... basically pantheist.
Is nowhere in sight.
So,
but what he was planning on what time
about? Context. Yeah. Okay. I mean, I'm there, but I guess kind of what I'm hearing. Here's a guy. You know, somebody comes into town. I don't know. Kind of
he was obedient to what God told him.
So
me.
Okay. So
and then
of course his life was in danger.
Because I can give you a real life example.
All right, let's pray, and then we can do God's
servant. That's right. Riches.
Let's pray, and then we can do. I think we learned a lot of different. Talked about a lot of different things.